Hey, folks, I'm Josh.
I'm Jen.
And this is From Cloud to Cab. It's a new podcast we're working on aimed specifically at agricultural issues for farmers to listen to when they're doing their field work or, you know, at their leisure. So we hope you guys get a lot out of it. And really, the way it came up, Jen came to my office at the Hughes Center for Agroecology and brought the whole idea. So Jen, you want to just tell them where you got the idea from and why you think it's a good way to get these issues across to the audience?
Sure. I have a company called Resource Smart that I started in 2013, and I work on a lot of projects that do education and outreach for farmers on practices that are good for improving the economics as well as improving water quality from their farms. And so I work with the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Association. Actually, I didn't say that right. I work with the Delaware Maryland 4R Alliance on projects that help advance like precision agriculture and different nutrient management opportunities there. I also work with some of the folks on soil health practices. And so working with some of these different groups, the idea of a podcast had come up more than once among these different groups, among the farmers in these different groups, that they would listen to a podcast about soil health or about nutrient management and precision ag. And so I wanted to have this as an opportunity to kind of bring those different topics together and add on to it too, because there's a lot of different things, a lot of different facets that farmers have to manage on their farms. So like you said, this is an opportunity to get that word out there about different projects and things like that in a new format.
Right. And here at the Hughes Center, we just really work to engage all the players in that field, you know, the agricultural, environmental organizations, bring them together and try to work out differences between them. So, you know, we felt this was a good avenue to, you know, at least help spread some of the messages of the issues and show people that farmers are trying to do their part to, you know, clean up the Chesapeake Bay or around the whole region. So we hope you guys enjoy. This is the very first episode that we're doing, and today we're talking about soil health. And with us for that, we have Jamie Arthurs from NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and Steve Darcy, who's just basically an overall soil health guru out of Prince George's County, but he's also with Prince George's County Soil Conservation District, and he was a really interesting guy. So, again, we hope you guys enjoy this, and let's do the show. Soil. What soil health, it's a topic that in recent years has been getting a lot of attention. Really, we're gonna dive into what it means to farmers here in the Mid-Atlantic region. So, Jamie, you want to tell us what you do with NRCS?
Sure. I'm a resource conservationist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources Conservation Service. Typically, you heard her refer to herself as NRCS. I've worked with the agency for about 16 years. I actually started as a conservation district planner in Delaware and moved and come on with NRCS as a soil conservationist. And since then, I've actually been in addition to being a soil conservationist, I was also a district conservationist and a program manager as well. So, but more recently, as a resource conservationist, I work with our field office staff and planning staff, primarily working on our conservation practice standards. I also deal a little bit with some of our Farm Bill compliance, and then I also have the joy of working with farmers and with our planters with soil health as well.
Steve, what do you do there with in Prince George's County?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I'm proud to be a fourth generation Prince George's County farmer. Out of school, I went to work as a entry-level engineer with the Prince George's Soil Conservation District. So I was able to work on with farmers, most of them I knew, on their farms, putting in conservation practices. I did that for about 27 years. For the last 5 years, I've been the district manager. So now I oversee the urban development program, the agricultural resource conservation program. We have an ag land preservation program. We also have a very active outreach and education. And I'm pleased to say that this year in my budget, I got approved to do urban ag conservation program. So we got a lot of interesting things going on in Prince George's County, even though a lot of people think we're all urbanized.
I was going to say, people think Prince George's County, they think, you know, D.C. area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Prince George's County is about 285,000 acres, 900,000 people. 60,000 is still in active agriculture. We're very diverse. And with our ag land preservation program, we've got about just over 6,100 acres preserved, still actively moving forward. So with that in progress, we're having more young people come back to the farm, and people are also investing in kind of interesting, non-traditional agricultural type activities. For instance, we're the fourth largest equine county in Maryland. We have the fourth largest number of equines, so that's a big part of our business. We have about 7 or 8 vineyards now, 4 active wineries. We even have a wine trail now, so that's exciting. Alpacas is big. Grass-fed beef is pretty good, and a lot of CSAs, which is community-supported agriculture for organic vegetables.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of exciting things going on.
And Steve, you're one of Maryland's soil health champions. Can you tell us a little bit about that and about your farm?
Sure, I'd love to talk about it. So the family farm is 150 acres. It's a relatively flat soil, flat topography, A and B slopes, Collington-Wyss soil series, which is really a very good soil. Unfortunately for us, it raises good houses as well. So a lot of the area around me is developed. But you can raise pretty much any crop on Collington-Wyss soils. It's a fine sandy loam soil, pretty well drained, very productive. So traditionally we were tobacco, cattle, hogs, and then over the years we've transitioned out of tobacco, out of hogs. My wife now has a horse boarding operation, raised hay for many years, a lot of straw production, grain, corn, soybeans, small grains, things like that, and a small vegetable garden that I like to tinker around with.
Now, I should point out, I worked on a small urban farm in Prince George's County in college that was probably smaller than your garden.
Well, yeah, I have been known to kind of go overboard sometimes. I can't eat it all. I just like watching it grow. But I was asked to, I found out about the Soil Health Champion Network through actually my chairman of the Soil Conservation Board, who's very active with National Association of Conservation Districts, the NACD. So I called up and met all the parameters. So I was the first soil health champion in Maryland just by stroke of luck because I called. But the Soil Health Champion Network, I'm really pushing all the soil conservation districts in Maryland to get one in their district because I think it really is so important that we, we have this new understanding, new awareness of soil health. So I think every county in Maryland needs to have a soil health champion. And one of the things we're charged as a soil health champion to do is go out and do things just like this, which works well for me because I'm already paid to go out and do this, so I can just ease it into my schedule. But, the soil, I think they have nationwide now, I think 180 maybe, soil health champions.
Are there any other counties in Maryland that have one?
Yes. We have 2 in Prince George's, 1 in Baltimore, and 1 in Howard.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Surprised that there aren't any on the Eastern Shore at all.
I think we just have to keep pushing the districts to encourage these landowners, these farmers to get involved. They're busy with things. And some people are a little hesitant to, when they find out they have to give a talk or give a presentation, they say, that's not for me. But I'm confident that we could be the first state in the union to have all of our districts. We have 23 counties and 24 districts in Maryland. So it's exciting. It's fun. I have a lot of fun with it.
Let's get into the topic a little bit. I guess we should start by defining what a healthy soil is. Do either of you want to take a stab at doing that?
I was going to let Steve go.
All right,
first.
Sure. NRCS has its own definition. I can either read it, or I kind of came up with my own definition this morning.
That's great.
So to me, a healthy soil is a balanced, thriving, living ecosystem of macroorganisms and microorganisms all working in unison in a symbiotic relationship. So NRCS, pretty much says the same thing. What it is, it's a sustainable soil. It's a soil that can sustain and grow and produce, and it has all the right mix and balance. So think of your body doing its tasks every day. It has to have all the parameters right to be healthy and sustainable.
The big thing Steve mentioned was living. He hit the nail on the head as far as the definition. And I think they actually probably must have talked to you about that, because it basically reads the same thing. But I noticed the big thing for me when talking about soils, and particularly healthy soils, is that living organism, or living system. I don't think a lot of times people think of it as a living system. And I think I'm glad to hear Steve say that. And, that means a lot to him. And that's when I'm talking to people, that's one of the things I emphasize, is that it's a living system. It's not just a medium that we grow our crops in. It's something that needs to be taken care of and sustained in order to provide,
And how... what kind of impacts, I guess, does that have in terms of, if you take that living system kind of philosophy in, how does that impact your management and the way that you look at soil and how you I don't know how you treat it, but, so what kind of effects does that have? How does that carry through in somebody's management?
Well, speaking of my own personal relationship with the farm and the soils, I've been an active composter for probably 25 years. I compost horse manure from the stable and turn it into a saleable product. And so through that process, I've learned a lot about the microorganisms that are existing in that whole thing. And they do all the work. I don't have to do anything but just turn it. Mother Nature takes care of all of it. The oxygen, the rain, and the little microbes do all the work and make me money. So that's a good thing. So when the whole idea of soil health and it being a living organism, I've been on the farm all my life. I've been doing conservation for 32 years. A little light bulb went off and said, this is not an inert object. This is a living, breathing object, and we're not really doing the right thing with it. And we can go all the way back to the Great Dust Bowl for examples of how we have killed it, basically. And now we're all looking to bring it back and resuscitate it, in my opinion. And I think we're doing a good job. We're coming on strong. There's still a lot of work to do. But I think when people finally get that little light bulb moment and say, wow, this is something that's living, you start looking at it totally different. You start thinking about it totally different. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things with soil health and healthy soil, is NRCS's, willingness to move forward and push that by creating, a soil health division within NRCS. I mean, that's something new that hasn't happened in my career, obviously. That's the first time it happened in my career. So it just kind of shows the level of commitment, I think, that, you know, that NRC has towards, you know, moving that forward. And, you know, talking about, you know, the healthy soil, a lot of times I know, you know, even in my career, you know, working with farmers doing conservation practices, we always focused on, you know, what the issue was in the field, like, you know, okay, you've got an erosion issue or something like that, when, you know, we've kind of come around to this new line of thinking as well, if we you know, improve the health of that soil in that field, we might not have that erosion issue. So we, you know, we've kind of got a history of putting Band-Aids on it. We did a good job, you know, we did good work, you know, both through NRCS and the conservation districts. But I think this whole idea now is, okay, well, let's not just focus on where that erosion is occurring in the field, but overall, how can we improve the infiltration of that field? How do we improve that soil health so you get better infiltration, you don't get that runoff that causes the erosion? So
I think one of the interesting things about this is, since the Great Dust Bowl, we've been pushing best management practices. It started soil erosion, to reduce soil erosion. Then it started looking at water quality, nutrient management, and we've been pushing soil health practices for the last 70 plus years, but now it has a new term. It wasn't soil health practices then. To some people, maybe some of the soil scientists and some of the academics, we're looking at it like that, but us in the field and us as farmers, we really weren't looking at it like that. At least I wasn't looking at it like that. So we were looking at mostly just the surface, trying to keep the topsoil on, because we knew enough that produces our food and that gives us income. And then we really weren't worried about what was happening deep in the soil unless we had a drainage problem, or, you know, unfortunately, we drained a lot of wetlands to produce more food. So, you know, it's a learning process. As human beings, we mess it up, and then we try to fix it, and we learn as we go.
Well, and one thing that I thought was interesting there is that, because, you know, when, Jamie, you were talking, I thought of soil health and the way that NRCS is looking at it as kind of a whole system approach. And then, Steve, when you were bringing that in, that's kind of an interesting concept that, you know, farmers sort of always had a whole system approach in mind. Not that you, like, were thinking of it that way, but you sort of, farmers and field staff and conservationists don't necessarily have sort of the luxury of being compartmentalized, you know, in any specific discipline or any specific BMP, that it kind of, like, it does roll into the way that you were already working and the way that you were already thinking about it. Maybe just with the addition of a biological component that wasn't there before. So with that, I mean, what does a healthy soil look like as opposed to an unhealthy soil? And is that the same here as it is in other places? Even, I mean, we have sort of Western Shore and Delmarva here. Like, so does it even mean the same thing on two different sides of the bay?
Well, let's think of soil series, and let's think of different counties and states across the nation, and even in Maryland. You know, Maryland's always been identified as a small replica of the United States. We have coastal plain, we have Piedmont, we have mountain soils, and in Delaware, I guess it's mostly coastal.
Yeah, mostly coastal.
So there are definitely differences in soil series, but I think there's no difference in the way we treat them to get, at least as far as production agriculture is concerned, I think the practices that we apply to improve soil health are the same. There may be different techniques, and there may be different nutrients. There may be different, of course, pH levels and things like that, infiltration rates, soil structure. But as the soils change, the BMPs that we use are pretty much going to be the same to get soil health benefits. I don't know. I've never worked in soils in the mountain or a little bit in the Piedmont, but coastal plain, I know we're pretty much applying the same things. Mm-hmm. One thing that I don't have to deal with in my county that you guys are dealing with in Delaware and also on the lower eastern shore is salt intrusion, and that's a big issue. So I know there's some research going on trying to address that.
Yeah, we're actually partially funding it, the Harry Hughes Center for Agroecology.
Cool.
There's a UMD researcher down in Dorchester and Somerset.
Somerset County, yeah.
Yeah.
Young lady.
Yeah, Kate Tully.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So
that's a huge problem.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And it's changing what can be grown down there. So p- part of what she's going to be looking at is if there are salt-resistant crops that can be grown, or even just what you can do to mitigate that. But you know, how do you mitigate something that to that extent?
Right.
That has that big of an impact to a whole
it's huge.
Region, right? And it's funny you brought that up. I guess it makes sense though, and it's even like killing trees down there.
Oh yes.
Wetlands.
Well, there was just recently an article in
The Atlantic, I think.
One of the journals that I get, and one of the. I think the chairman of the board in Dorchester County, or maybe Somerset County, his name escapes me right now, but he's losing his farm to salt intrusion. So that's a big problem.
Jamie, anything to add about what a healthy soil looks like versus an unhealthy soil?
Well, I guess I kind of, I really think about, not being on the farm like Steve is all the time, but being, moving around Delaware and seeing the different, soils, different soil types, and fields under different management practices. And, my experience between soil sampling for, doing pre-side dress nitrogen tests and soil sampling for nutrient management plans, I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on, the different soils and different things like that, especially in Delaware. And, it's a noticeable difference, on those farms where people have been, been traditionally doing no-till and, have been doing cover crop for some time, you can really tell the difference in the soil structure, is the big thing that I notice when I go out in the field and do soil samples and stuff like that, how easily the probe goes into the ground, different things like that. And even talking to some of the farmers, even particularly in Sussex County, earlier this spring about, areas where, they've been doing no-till for a while, but have increased the amount of cover crops have been doing in the field, and how they, commented about, we've got a ditch in that field, but the areas that it used to drain no longer pond water. Now, recently, obviously, I would think everybody's got an issue with ponding regardless based on the amount of water we've gotten. But, I've gotten those type of comments from farmers recently that they notice, even in the first few years of doing these, particularly, increasing cover crops, the use of cover crops on the farms, they see the changes in the field already. So, but typically, the big thing I look for is that color. To me, soil organic matter is kind of what really fuels that whole system. So anything that really puts, not so much the residue on surface, which is important as well, but really puts those root systems down in there and it contributes to that organic matter in the soil, that really is what, to me, it was really what makes a difference and what makes that kind of starts building that soil, making it healthier. So, and from there, it kind of builds on itself. So
I think one of the first things you'll notice in a healthier soil is the structure. It's blockier. It's almost like it's puffed up instead of compacted and compressed. And the other thing you will always notice are earthworms. And if you see a lot of earthworms, you're looking good. And I come from a background where we plowed and dissed every inch of the farm. That's how tobacco farming was. And So we still struggle with a 8 to 10 inch plow layer. There's still that frangipane there, and that's why it's so important to do some deep tillage radishes or things like that. I think we have better success with deep-rooted hard pan busting crops than we do mechanical. I think so many times, if you're subsoiling at the wrong time of year, you're doing more damage to your field than not. But what it looks like is the color is a little darker. But I just think it's like a big, healthy sponge, and it's blocky, and it's got a lot of pore space in it, and it generally has a lot of worms, which is great for fishing. So, see, soil health has another benefit.
It's funny, the compaction that, our state soil scientist, Phil King, he always calls compaction public enemy number one. I mean, anytime he does presentations or has an opportunity to talk to farmers, compaction is always the big one that he really talks about because, that really, really impacts productivity, So you limit the root growth of your crop, it impacts your yield. So that's one of the big things he always pushes is, obviously, trying to stay out of the fields when the conditions aren't right, if you have to till or a tiller, but, using cover crops that, have that impact, like your deep-rooted radish, tillage radishes and different things like that can help break up.
There was a great presentation at the crops conference this year. Were you there? And the young guy was talking about soil compaction, and they using GIS satellite image, and they could tell exactly where, like, the farmer ran the loaded cart mm-hmm. across the field. And he said the amount of lowering productivity is just immense. People just really take compaction for granted. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, one of the things, talking about tools to kind of assess – soil health in the field, one of the big things he always refers to is the old pin flag. Go out there and walk around with a farmer producer and walk around that field and put that pin flag in and see how far it goes down, and try to find an area where you don't have compaction and show them how far it goes down,
right.
And then talk about that impact that compaction has on, not only the soil health, but ultimately, the productivity of the field. So,
well, and so when we talk about what we've described so far, I've heard about kind of density, color, earthworms, compaction. Is it fair to say that, trying to get a handle on where you are with soil health, is that more qualitative than it is quantitative? Or are there numbers that you can put to it that can give you an indication of where you are? I'm guessing it's more like a spectrum than like a pass or fail, but, can people look at?
Yeah, well, we have one in Delaware. I know Maryland also has a soil health card, producers or field employees can use to work with farmers to, kind of assess their soil health. And there are some of them are physical measurements that you can go out and collect a sample and determine bulk density and things like that. There's also, you can do biology, as far as respiration, you can put a little paddle in with the soil. It gives you an idea of how good your respiration is. So there's several different tests that you can do to assess your soil health. Cornell has the Cornell Soil Health Assessment. The Comprehensive Assessment of Soil Health, or CASH, I believe is how they refer to it. But it's kind of a combination of a traditional agronomic soil test, and then it also has some additional information that the producer provides as far as, penetrometer readings and different things like that, as far as figuring out, compaction and different things like that. So, and then, with NRCS, we had our Rick Haney, who has put forth the Haney soil test, which is more of an assessment of, the activities of the soil and what you would get out of it through just a natural rainfall solution, like what comes out of it just through water. And it kind of gives you an assessment of what nutrients you would have available, different things like that. And you can kind of use that to gauge where you're at and where you want to go as well. So there's a few options for everything from, almost what you would consider a traditional soil sample for agronomic reasons to those more qualitative, going out there with the pin flag or the shovel and really looking at what the structure looks like. Is it, is it got that fluffy, kind of well aggregated, a lot of pore space look to it? Or is it, when you dig it out and you hold it in your hand, does it pour right out of the bottom of your hand? Or is it just one big cinder block? So there's several different ways. The big thing is just, getting out there and taking a look at, see what you have and then compare it to, having something to compare it to. Well, why does this field perform better than this field? Well, you know, I've got a certain set of characteristics of the soil in this field, and this is the same exact soil under the, you know, but it's a different management. Why is it performing not as well, you know? And you start looking at that, kind of drawing those conclusions, and you know, start making maybe little management decisions, changes based on that information that you're seeing in the field.
And so for a farmer, how can they know sort of where the end point is as far as improving practices? You know, what can they expect to get to?
Yeah, what's enough and when do you get there? Yeah.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of a question I've had, particularly in Delaware, is, you know, looking at it from a soil organic matter from that side is, you know, what's the expectation? You know, if I've got a soil that's 1.5, you know, percent soil organic matter, you know, where does it need to get to? You know, is 3 the best we can do? Is 5 the best we could do? You know, I know given, you know, in particularly in Delaware, you know, it seems like to me if we can get something up to between 3 to 5, that would be really good. But given our climate and different things like that, there is a limitation on how much organic matter you can build. You know, it's not limitless. There is a limit to it. Now, you know, if you're out west in a situation where, you know, the soil's developed under grassland prairie conditions, you know, you're already starting off with, you know, high organic soils, and they're relatively deep. We don't have that luxury here. You know, our soils developed under a different system. So, but, you know, I've had farmers tell me that they've seen, you know, they've seen improvement or feel that they have had improvements in production in just a couple years, you know. But the reality, I think, more is when you're looking at your soil organic matter, it's going to take 10, 20, 30 years to really build it up over time. And it's a long-term commitment. It's not, you know, and it's for most of the farmers, it's a commitment to either their kids or, you know, the next generation that's coming up behind them. They're going to see some benefits, but really in the long term, it's going to be, you know, generations down the road that are really going to see the most benefits from building that organic matter.
Yeah, I can't say enough about how long it takes and how you really got to practice good farming practices, even though our farm was clean tilled. My grandfather and my father always practiced multi-species cover crops. They would rest fields. We had a herd of cattle that we would rotate fields out. And the topsoil on that farm that I'm blessed with now to take care of, it's 18 to 24 inches of topsoil. Mm. That's unheard of in a coastal plain soils, because our soils have just been, historically, they're so heavily weathered, and they were just really not managed well when we first settled this continent. So we're always going to be playing a catch-up game. But we've done a little research, and I've asked some of my farmer friends, my good friend Michael Heller, who has the Chesapeake Bay Foundation Claggett Farm, is my neighbor. And when he took that farm over in maybe early 80s, it was completely clean tilled. The organic matter on some fields were less than 1. A lot of fields were 1, 1.5. And since that time, what's that, 40 years, the fields that they've taken and put into pasture, he says, I just spoke to him this morning because I was curious. He said there are 3, maybe 3.5% organic matter. Now, that took 40 years of just heavy pasture. The grain that I raise, I lease that out to another farmer who's an excellent farmer. And so I also talked to him this morning. And we've been no-tilling that farm since 1993. And I would say we've improved our organic matter by maybe 50%. What used to be 1.2 might be 1.8 now. It varies. But it's a slow process, and I think as we move forward, we're going to learn that if we get these multi-species mixes, a lot of legumes, We learn how to extend the growth of the cover crop before we put our commodity crop in. The longer we can keep something green on there, I think we're going to really see these organic matters start increasing. And, you know, we were talking about what a healthy soil looks like. And Jamie made a good observation. When it rains, healthy soils, that water infiltrates or pools and goes into the soil. Unhealthy soils, it runs off and you get a lot of erosion. Another telltale sign of good crop rotation in healthy soils is the water, if it does run off, what does it look like? If it's milky brown, you're not doing a very good job. If it's clear, you're doing an excellent job. And so that's a testament of your best management practices and also of soil infiltration. While we're talking about soil infiltration, I think one thing people need to really look at is, we'll get back to this soil structure and hard pans. Somewhere I heard, and don't quote me, but every 10 inches of root growth is worth an inch of rainfall to a crop. So if you can break through the hard pan, if your corn crop, say the roots are only going 2 feet, if you can get that to 6 to 10 feet, think how much extra moisture you're getting to that crop and how that crop will sustain itself in a drought situation. So if we're going to feed all the masses in the next 50 years, what is 9 billion people, I mean, this soil health thing, along with genetics and improved growing systems, it's going to be huge. It really is going to be huge.
So I think you guys have touched on it already, but as far as what you're doing in your respective organizations to support farmers that are working to improve their soil health, I didn't know if you wanted to add anything on or talk about any programs in specifically. So Steve, I'm gonna start with you.
Well, you know, we have always promoted taking soil samples. So we'll even help take soil samples, provide soil bags, and, you know, we'll even box them all up and ship them, because if you get a big box of them, you can ship them for free, that kind of stuff. Well, now we're taking that to a new level. Farmers should continue to get their soil samples, which in Maryland, you know, they're required by law to have a nutrient management plan, which means you have to have your basic soil samples, soil tests done. Well, we're very excited because we are we being the Soil Conservation District, are embarking on two soil health demonstration farms. One of them is going to be in the southern part of the county. It's going to be geared to traditional production farmers. The other is in the northern or central part of Prince George's County, and it's right in the heart of the urbanized area. It's still a production farm operation, but we're hoping to use both of those demonstration farms to show people how to do soil health practices. So one of those things that we did in getting this whole thing set up was we went and did the Cornell Comprehensive Assessment of Soils. That is really tells you a lot about your soils. The fields that we did on our first demo farm, they've got it set up like a stoplight. Red is stop, yellow is caution, green is go. You're good, your report. It's the quality ranking. Well, lo and behold, most of ours are red, other than availability of phosphorus and potassium. That's because we've had a history of application with fertilizer for tobacco. So our soils are really high in both of those elements. But as far as aggregate stability, which is like infiltration and rooting and potential for erosion, we're in the red zone. Organic matter, we're either orange or red. Soil microbial activity, they do that by measuring the respiration in the soil. All in red. Soil pH is in red. So if we can take this farm, myself and the young guys that I've got working on, we'll probably all be retired before we really see, you know, the full benefit of the soil health, because it takes time. You have to think about, we've been farming these farms since 1600s, but before that they were still heavily weathered soil. So it's going to take a long time to bring it back. But I just think this What I'd like to see is more farmers do these comprehensive assessments of their soil health and spend the money. Now, when you speak of money, a basic soil test is $6.50. This test is $65. So we can talk about, I've got some crazy ideas about that later too. But
is that through the Soil Conservation District?
No, this is a farmer takes that himself. He'd have to pay for that himself. We'll help them get the samples, help ship them, but they have to, you know, provide the bags and things like that. But as Jamie was saying, you know, Maryland has a soil health card, so one of the things we're doing now is working with all of the staff, getting them trained so we can go out and not just talk to you about best management practices that control erosion, improve water quality, but how we can help make your soil healthier. So it's a learning process.
Yeah, and you know, the big thing with it, and you hit the nail on the head again, Steve, it's a learning process. I mean, it's even, you know, as we kind of move through this, you know, even us at NRCS and the conservation districts, we're learning more and more about what a healthy soil is. We get new technology, new information, you know, as that develops, you know, so is kind of that soil health, you know, what is soil health and what is a healthy soil and what it means to you on the farm, that's going to change over time too.
I'll give you a secret to selling conservation, and I think this will transform into selling soil health. The bottom line. If you can take a farmer's bottom line and improve it, you will sell the conservation. Mm-hmm. There's a great video out called The Soil Carbon Cowboys, and if you get a chance, watch that. And these guys are real hard-nosed grazers. And one of them said, wow, if I had known what I know now, I would have done this so many years ago. So if we can improve their bottom line, then we can sell conservation and we can sell soil health. And I think we can show that. I think NRCS, you know, they have economists working on it. Back in the late 80s in Prince George's County, we really had a push for no-till. And one of the ways we sold that was through economics. Look at your fuel costs. Look at your chemical costs. Look at the wear and tear on your tractors and equipment, not to mention the wear and tear on yourself. I mean, if you've ever spent a 10 or 12 or 14-hour day in a tractor seat, I can barely walk. So no-till was a blessing to me because instead of plowing and disking and harrowing and spraying and going back and harrow it again, I can make two passes and I'm done. Mm-hmm. So, and that improved my bottom line. So,
yeah, I've often compared it to the no-till revolution. You know, it's one of those things. The problem I see with not a problem, but one of the things that to overcome with soil health is, you know, a lot of times with the no-till, you know, you know, talking to a farmer, you know, if you've taken two passes across the field out, you can put a fuel cost to that. It's a little bit easier. You know, sometimes with soil health, it's a longer term return, and you don't necessarily, you know, see that savings right off the bat. And that's some of the things I think that we're, you know, looking for, or, you know, some of the things we need is kind of what is that return that we're getting from increased soil health. You know, I know, you know, a lot of the questions that farmers seem to be asking is, well, you know, I'm still doing the nutrient management the same way, in particular in Delaware and in Maryland, I'm still doing my nutrient management the same, or nitrogen management the same way I have for years. You know, what point can I start, you know, pulling back on my nitrogen rates, still get my yields that I'm used to getting, or improved yields, you know, that I'm used to getting, so I can realize that benefit. I think, you know, that's one of the things that we really need to focus on as, you know, as an agency, you know, whether it be the agency or the universities, really looking into that economics and saying, okay, this is where you need to be in order to really start realizing those savings, or, you know, or giving a farmer a good feeling or assessment of where they need to be in order to start, you know, realizing those savings. And I think that's one of the big things that we need to continue to do is make sure that, you know, we're having, you know, us as NRCS, the partners, we're all having those conversations together and making sure that information's getting out to producers so they can start making those decisions in their management systems. The big thing is, I always think, and I think we do a very good job of it, is, you know, outreaching to people, you know, and trying to get them more information. I know in Delaware with the Soil Health Partnership, there's a lot of key people in places that, you know, really have, you know, really made a really strong effort, and I think it's happening, it's starting to happen nationwide, is getting that information into people's hands so they can make those decisions, you know.
There's definitely a correlation between some of our new practices and cost. Specifically, I'm referring to like multi-species cover crops. They're not cheap. Mm-hmm. I think the NACD, I think there was a group called the DATU, and they did four farm studies, and I think you can find that on the NACD website. Mm-hmm. And they did that cost comparison and looked at, you know, the mm-hmm. inputs and what the farmers got in return. But I think that's one reason Maryland has been so successful with their cover crop program, because, you know, it took many years. When I was early in my career, I sat on task force and we beat it around. Some people are so opposed to paying for incentives, and I'm a big fan of incentives because it's for the public good. If we can get people understanding with a little bit of tax dollar put to it, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And it's been a huge success in Maryland. So hopefully that'll continue.
Yeah.
Well, you made reference earlier to a crazy idea regarding soil health tests when you were talking about the cost, so I would like to hear some more about that.
Well, it's incentive-based. So if you want people to improve, you have to start at the beginning. The beginning is, how healthy is my soil? Well, I don't know how healthy my soil is unless I take these expensive tests. So, you know, Maryland also has a very good cost share program. The MAX program has been around for a long time, and it pays for a lot of different practices, mostly based on reducing soil erosion and reducing nutrients. I would really like to see down the road that we start weaving in some soil health practices with cost share. And the first thing I'd like to see is the cost of these expensive comprehensive soil assessments. I mean, because, you know, Maryland just spent had a task for all their nutrient consultants on phosphorus levels. Mm-hmm. And the data that's coming out of that is pretty fascinating. We have a lot of land in Maryland that we can use poultry litter mm-hmm. on, where everybody thought that was not true. Mm-hmm. So the science is important. So my crazy idea is let's do incentives. Let's help farmers find out where they are so we know where to go. The other crazy idea I have is not so crazy, I guess, but carbon trading. Everybody talks about nutrient trading. I really think our bang for our buck is in carbon trading. Some of the research that I've read and some of the workshops I've been to, wow, we can make a huge impact on global warming and reduction of greenhouse gases with farming. How wonderful is that? So we feed ourselves and we save the planet too. That's exciting for farmers, since we're always getting beat up for polluting
being
everything,
the bad guy,
for
yeah.
being the bad guy.
Always being the bad guy.
That's my crazy idea. I just think, you know, if a farmer can do soil health practices and get paid to do it as an incentive plus feed the world, is that crazy? I don't know.
One of the things, I mean, I did want to mention that, you know, with our conservation stewardship program, you know, talking about farm bill programs, conservation programs, the conservation stewardship program actually did have an enhancement in it for soil health testing. But typically, you know, the conservation stewardship program is usually, you know, it's focused at you know, typically those farmers that are, you know, kind of top producing farmers, you know, in order to get in, you have to meet a certain stewardship threshold and things like that, and have to be doing a certain amount of conservation already to be eligible for the program. But you're starting to see they are starting to work soil health evaluations into our programs. I know, you know, like Maryland, Delaware has a very popular cover crop program, whether it be through the district cover crop program or through the EQIP, the Environmental Quality Incentive Program in Delaware. I think it was almost $1 million just through EQIP last year, and that's not counting what the districts, you know, did on their own as well. So, you know, I think the cover crop program is you know, in and of itself, it addresses one of the actually a couple principles of soil health, you know. So I think that's that, you know, it's starting to develop. I think we're going to see probably in the future. There's been some discussion about soil health management systems. You've got, a conservation plan for your farm, and that would also be your kind of your soil health management, and and kind of what you need to do to improve your soil health over time. So I think, as we, just like the technology that you talked about, Steve, as it improves and things like that, I think we're going to see how the delivery for soil health is going to change as well through, you know, through the programs.
Well, I thought that was a great discussion. Anything else you guys have on the top of your head you want to talk about?
Well, I warned you that Jamie and I could talk about this all day long. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity. Sure. I think this is so important to get the word out. Farmers are busy. Everybody's busy. But any way we can, different media angles that we can get the word out, I think it's encouraging. I know from the Soil Conservation District standpoint, we're all about soil health. We're really working. We're very fortunate to have our partners at NRCS and Maryland Department of Agriculture, and also for our county government, they're 100% behind us. And I think we just need to keep moving forward. We're very active in our Soil Conservation District, reaching out to the young folks in the elementary schools. They're the next generation. We're going to be long gone. We've got to get this instilled in our kids coming along, because they're the next generation. They're the ones that's going to have to pick up the banner and go with it. So, but I really appreciate the opportunity.
Of course. And thank you too, Jamie.
Yep, thank you.
And with that, until next time, everybody.